Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with director Bill English and the cast from the play Art, available for virtual viewing at SF Playhouse and opening their 2021 season. The play by French novelist playwright Yasmina Reza won the 1998 Tony Award and the New York Drama Critics Circle Award for Best Play. And the London production received the 1996-7 Olivier Award for Best Play. Peter Robinson reflects on social distancing in the age of COVID-19. And we raise the virtual curtain of Open Air's Corona Radio Theater for the first of a two-part grand finale of the San Francisco Mime Troupe's summer podcast series, Tales of the Resistance. This episode will bring us through all of the tales so far. Will the resistance become a revolution, or will the fascist corporate overlords maintain their control over the workers? Stay with us to find out. Let's begin with our good friends at San Francisco Playhouse, director Bill English, and actors Johnny Moreno, Jomar Tagatak, and Babak Bakhtiari about their production of Art, a comedy which raises questions not only about art, but about friendship, by French playwright and novelist Yasmina Reza. Gentlemen, welcome to virtual Open Air.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Sure, sure. Bill English, before we drill down on Art, tell me a bit about the transformation of the Playhouse from theater to multi-camera soundstage.
Yeah, well, once we realized we couldn't use it as a theater for the foreseeable future, somewhere along the way we came up with the idea that we had a pretty remarkably large and effective soundstage, so we returned everything to the black floor with black wings, and we built three camera platforms that sit out in the house, and we hung what's called a rep plot for lighting. So it just lights the space evenly and well. And so we figured we could just plop our very simple designs and basically productions that would be shot with three cameras edited live down into that space and feature acting and writing as the primary ingredients of great theater.
So are all the technical people folks who have been working with the Playhouse before, or you had some new folks as consultants come in?
Most everybody has worked with us before. In fact, I think everyone. The new person in different roles, some people playing different roles. Wolfgang Wakalowski has been our lighting and video designer for numerous Sandbox shows. But he was our sort of videographer for this show, who helped manage the cameras and also the switching system that enabled us to cut instantly from camera to camera during the run through. And then with post editing. So that was a new role for him. Tish Leung, who is our assistant technical director and normally our welder and carpenter par excellence, became a camera operator because she actually had a degree in photography. And we had another couple of people who were working outside their traditional role at San Francisco Playhouse.
Mm-hmm. It is beautifully filmed. I should mention that you can see this at sfplayhouse.org. We'll give you more details shortly. Interesting that it's both a combination of live cutting in and then some post-editing work, correct?
Just a little bit.
In terms of the camera switching.
Yeah, we fixed about 30 to 40 little snafus in the editing. And we added titles, you know, in the beginning and your too fast rolling credits at the end.
Right. Now, this offers a unique opportunity, I think, for audiences. Now, not without some trade-offs, of course, not being a live presence for the actors principal among them. But actually witnessing a filmed version of the play, there's not a bad seat in the house.
Absolutely. You're either front and center in one camera or you're right or left, and you can get your choice and you alternate back and forth. Yes.
I understand that the Playhouse is one of the first theaters in the country to get approval for this type of onstage filming.
I believe we were the second theater to get approval, but the first theater to actually pull it off, to actually have a product. And it's great because you can watch it any time of day or night. You know, you can watch half of it and come back and watch some more. You know, take your own intermission, decide when the intermission will go, fix yourself a snack.
Watching your underwear. You
know. Watching sure, your underwear, sure. Watching bed, you know.
Well, let's talk about this from an actor's perspective. I imagine that lack of an audience, whether it's just perceived from the glare of the footlights or even the occasional distracting cough, must make for a different sort of experience. Who would like to talk about that experience first? Let's get an actor to raise their hand and I'll acknowledge them. All right, I'm going to have to pick one. Jomar, let's talk this stuff with you.
You know, it's a super interesting experience because, you know, when I'm on the SF Playhouse stage or any stage, I feel like I want to project and make a connection with the audience, but you can't because all you see are seats there. But there is still the instinct to do that. So it's interesting how this process follows theatrical rules and follows the film rules as well, you know, and that was how the process goes. You know, as a theater actor, you want to open up to the audience. You want to invite the audience in from the second balcony to the orchestra parts of the stage. But here with the three cameras, you really got to open up to the camera at some times, and you got to be aware of where those three cameras at and how what kind of shot the cameras are getting from their angles, from their positions.
And I believe all three of you have some film experience or at least some camera experience, so you're used to at least adapting your maybe not your acting style, but at least your technique for the filming version. Johnny, tell me a little bit more about what an experience this was for you in terms of filming it and knowing that every expression is going to be watched a little bit closer than usual.
Yeah, I'll echo Jomar, certainly. The filmic quality, having to open up to camera, very much like you would do on a film set. I would say overall the process was fast, David. We had to move quickly on this. We're talking about 2 weeks of Zoom rehearsal at home and then moving into the space for a couple of days of spacing, and then we're off to the races, which is a frightening prospect for any actor to have to do. Unlike film, we, in order to keep that theatrical quality, we ran through the entire play. So there was no stopping and starting like you would do, or working on an individual scene and finessing it, trying to get the best out of it. It was, as we do in theater, once the green light goes, we go all the way to the end, which was terrifying with the limited amount of rehearsal. But, you know, you're working with Bob Eck and Joe Marr, professionals, and it was a joy to have them along for the ride to kind of help each other out, very much like we do on the stage.
And with Bill English in the wings offering a guiding hand, of course.
You can't forget about Bill, absolutely.
Actually, Bill was sitting there going, one. Three.
Yeah, we could hear him whispering the whole time. It was
one. What an ass.
And so let's talk a little bit about this amazing work of art called art, Yasmina Reza's play, which I mentioned won the 1998 Tony and New York Drama Critics Desk Award for Best Play. A three-hander, I suppose you can call it, or a play for three actors, although technically six hands are involved. Did any of you catch the Broadway version?
No, I think we must have been like 8 years old, maybe. Oh, wait, no.
I wasn't born yet.
Bob Akbakhtiari, thank you for that.
I'm bad at math.
Of course. of course, with a title like Art, there is indeed a, let's call it, radical work of art that takes center stage and serves as the vehicle for which the playwright explores the friendship and subsequent tensions among these three men.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, you know, the piece of art is sort of an impetus to explore the idea of like relationships and friendships and how they grow. And are you okay with letting your relationship grow in different ways as the years go by, kind of thing? And I think that's the thing that this play explores, and how people change and how people's relationships can take different forms, and whether we're okay with that, and whether there is some conflict or whether there is some resistance of letting people change, letting people transform, letting people evolve. You know, I think Johnny's character, Serge, has this idea of like evolution, this dynamic of evolution, and how people journey through that.
That's Jamar Tagatek. He is playing one of the three actors in Art, being available virtually from the San Francisco Playhouse and opening their 2021 season. Also talking with actors Johnny Moreno and Babak Bakhtiari and director Bill English. Bill, Art is the only title to have survived from the original season announcement. You had big plans before coronavirus turned things upside down. Huge cast, big musicals, animals, children, dancing bears, you name it. Now we've had to adapt a little bit. But Art seems to have been a good survivor.
Yeah, really. It was going to be the most ambitious season ever. We were going to do The Ferryman with like a cast of 18 and a goose and a rabbit and an infant. You know? But Art survived for a very specific reason. I know it was selected in February or so, because I was talking to a board member, Betty Nakamoto, about why was our country so turning against itself, and people were divided so violently, brother against brother, virtually. If you were going to vote for a certain politician, I couldn't even be your friend anymore, or you couldn't even be your brother. And so I said to her, that reminds me of a play. And it occurred to me a little later that the play was Art, where these two friends begin to doubt whether their friendship can even survive one of them liking a painting that the other one finds abhorrent. So I think the truth behind Art, or its reason for being in the season, became, of course, more and more prominent as the year went by. And it was blessed by having a very small cast.
True enough, yeah. Actor gentlemen that are with me, you all have some pretty impressive acting credits to your credit. I'm particularly a fan of Johnny Moreno's portrayal of King Arthur and the San Francisco Playhouse production of Camelot a few seasons back, as well as Stupid Effing Bird. And I've had the pleasure of seeing you in other roles as well, Tomar, as well as both the Playhouse and Cal Shakes. But Babak, every once in a while, a bio stands out for being a little bit outside the box, so to speak. I'm intrigued by a line in your bio that mentions that you own a philanthropic gas station amusement park. I need an explanation, please.
Well, that could like extensively proliferate into a long discussion. But in short, it's just it's basically a gas station car wash that I took over about 6 years ago and have gradually transformed into a cinematic experience inside the car wash and with sculptures. And there's currently we got our, you know, Donald Trump on display inside of a dinosaur's mouth with like a docile, serene gaze. We do quite a bit of fundraising for various humanitarian projects. It's an exciting little project of mine that's been ongoing for a little while.
I should also give you a little shout out for being a board member of Moms Against Poverty and certificates in anger management, as well as nicotine cessation and drama therapy. I think I could use a couple of those, so maybe I'll give you a call on the side.
Yeah, we could zoom it out, you know, zoom out. A little bit of rage resolution everyone could use. So,
Indeed. Johnny Moreno, Jamar Tagatak, and Babak Bakhtiari, thanks for talking with us a little bit about art. Bill English, remind us of how our audience can see and support this production.
Well, it's possible to buy a ticket on our website, just like you'd buy a ticket for any show. And when you bought this ticket, and we have a sliding scale that runs from $15 to $100. So people of all economic capacities can access the play. You will be sent a link, and then you just click the link and up will pop art on your laptop or your phone, or even your, you can broadcast it to your television from a device.
Very nice. Guys, thanks so much for coming. And I had a beautiful production. I thoroughly enjoyed it and recommend people to learn more at sfplayhouse.org. And we'll have a link at our website as well. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks
good
so much.
Seeing you guys.
Love you guys.
Love.
Still to come on Open Air, our Corona Radio Theater for the first of a two-part grand finale of the San Francisco Mime Troupe's summer podcast series, Tales of the Resistance. And next, Open Air's regular contributor and man about virtual town, Peter Robinson, reflects on social isolating in the age of COVID. Stay with us.
Hi, David, and we've just been listening to Billie Holiday singing When You're Smiling with Lester Young on the tenor sax. So I bring that up because this whole week I've been conscious when I walk outside that when everybody is wearing a mask, it's very hard to tell when you're smiling. But if you look close enough at the eyes, there is such a thing as eyes, and if you look close enough, you can also see that the forehead begins to wrinkle. So it makes me think about coronas, the virus, social isolation, and what happens when you're smiling. As Mark Twain put it, never regret anything that made you smile. And the thing about a smile, it goes two ways. They say when you give a smile, you get a smile. But smile also works on the cheeks. It works up to the brain. It actually creates a mood that makes you feel good. As they say, a smile is a curve that sets everything straight. So there is something wonderful. And I've been thinking this week, I was on my balcony overlooking the bay doing a Zoom broadcast to Australia in Sydney. And with Zoom, you can see, you can hear, but you can't touch. And of the five senses, people often regard touch as being one of the major senses. Yeah, sometimes during this virus, I often feel the whole world needs a hug. And that sense of communication that comes through touch, in many ways, is what I think we're missing nowadays. In the age of social distancing, you have to be 6 feet apart. You can't taste because unless you're in a restaurant, there's no opportunity to taste. You can hear your friend talking to you, so you've got the sense of sound. And, of course, you have the sense of vision. And if you're in the great outdoors hiking, you may even have a sense of smell. But that sense of touch, which brings people together in many different ways, is what is missing. In the old days, we would shake hands. In France, you would kiss people on two cheeks. In Japan, you would bow. Now you elbow. So joining elbows is a way of overcoming social distancing, but at the same time, maintaining a sense of touch. So I'm wondering, when we come out of this virus, how the world will have changed, whether Zoom will have taken over as the major form of communication, or whether, in fact, we'll go back to sitting around in a group meeting, seeing each other, reading facial definitions, facial expression, hearing murmurs, hearing claps, the whole thing of being together. And this is why I think when Billie Holiday sings about when you're smiling, she brings to life something in a song which always touches me. And certainly when she's backed up by Lester Young on that great warm tenor saxophone. So this week, I've been grateful and touched by two short poems which listeners to KLW have been kind enough to send to me. And the first comes way outside California, actually comes from Brooklyn in Massachusetts. It's by Erica Fine, and she calls her poem Wish. Here we go. The weeks go by, the fourth, the fifth, and normalcy becomes a myth. I want to hug, I want to hold, I want this deadly scourge controlled. I want to walk amidst a crowd. I want to lift this morbid shroud. I sit sequestered in my home and yearn to mingle, travel, roam. My energy is out of whack. I want my normal problems back. So there she is. She can have her normal problems back. We have all our own. And the second from a lady who simply calls herself Susie in Berkeley, a regular listener. And she has titled her poem, Virus Angst. Do I have it? Do I not? How do I know what I've got? My temperature is 99, a teeny more, but I feel fine. I think I'm fine, that is to say, but am I maybe just okay? And in this world of social distancing, sometimes being just okay is good enough. But I always get a smile from what poetry does to me. It speaks in a way that sometimes a whole prose piece doesn't do. But above all, what speaks to me most is listening to Billie Holiday singing When You're Smiling. Because as Marilyn Monroe said, the best makeup for a girl is to put a smile on your face. So let's hear Billie Holiday one more time, because I'll be back. And then over to you, David, and I wish you well.
great reminder to keep on smiling, courtesy of Peter Robinson, along with some lovely local poetry offered. We'll see Peter in another couple of weeks. I'm David LaTulipe. You're listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio, KALW. Next week, I'll be sitting out and Angie Coyle will be sitting in to talk with choreographers Amy Seiwert and Ben Needham Wood about a series of documentary dance films presented by San Francisco-based dance company Amy Seiwert's Imagery, called Sketch Films Red Thread. The project celebrates the 10th anniversary of the Sketch series and features world premieres by four choreographers in four different cities. We'll also be raising the virtual curtain of Open Air's Corona Radio Theater for the really final finale of the San Francisco Mime Troupe's summer podcast series, Tales of the Resistance. That will be the second part of this two-parter, but now it's time for the first part. It's bringing us through all of the tales of resistance that we have heard over these past several weeks, thanks to our partnership with the Mime Troupe. Will the resistance become a revolution? Or will the fascist corporate overlords maintain their control over the workers? Well, let's find out.
The San Francisco Mime Troupe presents Tales of the Resistance, four series of original political comedy audio plays presented as podcasts and audio shows on stations across the country by the never ever silent, always radical, and confusingly named San Francisco Mime Troupe. We have presented Jade for Hire, Novice Nurse Susie Terse, Fear of the Dark, and Dimension 2020. But now, part one of the final episode, the beginning of the end. But first, this message from our sponsor.
You're a risk taker, a thrill seeker, ready to take on this world and others. Here at Expat, you're our kind of people. We're the only company to help U.S. citizens seek refuge in other countries and even other planets. Is there life on Mars? We're not sure. We haven't been able to contact the ship for a while now. Nevertheless, we're still boldly going where no one has gone before. You're concerned about sea level rise, about global warming, fires, and floods. What if you could go to the one place where none of that mattered? What if you could live on an island paradise all year long? Introducing Expat Aquamarine. That's right. We're building an interconnected network of livable luxury rafts, all made out of recycled plastic from the Pacific garbage patch. In the international waters of the Pacific Ocean, you can do as you please and live carefree. Do you want to live in a country at war with itself? No! You want a private cabana, catered meals, and access to our public gardens. The Expat Aquamarine Archipelago is right next to Jamazon trade routes, so you'll have whatever you need when you need it. Lounge on the beach, hang out with celebrities, and still get business done with our top-tier satellite uplink. And best of all, we have no pesky regulations to get in our way, so we can build the society you want. That means paying no U.S. taxes. Expat Aquamarine, the sea is calling. You should answer, because there's nowhere else to go.
Friends, and welcome to the Abyss. Well, it looks like ex-cop Primo has gotten himself into quite a spot. He escaped the jail cell, but now he's got to rescue his new friend, Amandla. Poor Primo. On the run from his brothers in blue, trying to save a girl who was black and a red. All the colors Primo had delusions about. Maybe he should have been focusing more on the truth and not on the pigments of his imagination. At least the ghost of his father helped him figure out why he has such a fear of the dark.
Where are you cops taking me?
Don't worry. We got plans for you. Right, boys?
That's right, Captain.
Don't call me Captain.
Sorry.
Remember, I'm just a regular guy in regular American clothes with my regular American friends going to a protest.
Where you might have to crack an un-American protester's head.
Exactly.
Let me go!
Oh, we'll let you go, all right. As soon as we get to the protest. See, we need someone to be an example of what happens to all the brothers and sisters when you get out of order. And for your comrades, well, doesn't Antifa need a martyr?
No!
Zip tie her hands and put her in the trunk.
You pigs! You can't do this! Let me!
Come on, boys!
Oh, damn it! What do I do?
Remo.
Dad?
Remember what the captain said to you.
He said, they're taking her to the protest.
Remo.
What?
You have a car.
Oh, right. Thanks, Tatai.
Don't mention it.
Okay, Captain, we're here.
Don't call me Captain!
Sorry!
Okay. Let's, mingle a little. When the time is right, we get her out, put a gun in her hand, make it look like she's attacking us, and we got us some justifiable homicide.
Won't the press know it's a lie?
The press will print any lie about violent Black Lives Matter or Antifa protests, even if they know it's fake, just so they could say they're being balanced when they report all the actual violence we're doing. Now let's move out!
Amandla, can you hear me? They're gone. I'm gonna find a way to get you out of this trunk. Just hold on. Amandla.
Primo, what are you doing here?
I came to help you. How did you open the trunk from the inside?
There's an escape latch in the trunk of every car made since 2001. You didn't know that? I thought you were a cop.
Huh. How did you get out of the zip ties?
I got half a razor blade sewn into the back of my belt for situations like this. Now let's get out of here before...
Hey, she got out! Captain!
Don't call me Captain!
Sorry! Should we shoot them?
Oh, rubber bullets!
Come on!
Ow! My leg!
Get up!
I can't!
They're coming!
Leave me!
Primo! Hey! Are you all right?
Who are you?
I'm a nurse.
Novice nurse Susie Terse, the tell-it-like-it-is healthcare worker. After escaping the clutches of evil Dr. Janice, Nurse Susie and ambulance driver Sparks were rushing the precious vial of blood back to City Hospital.
We're rushing a vial of blood back to City Hospital. Blood that might spell the end of COVID-19.
COVID-19?
COVID-19! The pandemic that had brought the world to its knees.
We've got to get you in the ambulance.
Where do you think you're going?
This man is injured.
They're under arrest.
Arrest? But you don't look like police officers.
Well, the captain said...
Shut up! No, we're not police officers. We're just regular Americans.
Then you can't arrest anyone. Now get out of our way.
But you can't take them!
Yes, I can.
You can't just say that.
I just said it.
But
hey, regular Americans, don't look now, but there's a whole bunch of other Americans heading this way.
Sergeant?
Captain?
Don't call me Captain!
But you called me Sergeant!
Shut up! Just... move out!
Come on, Susie. We're holding up traffic.
Okay, Sparks.
And so, Susie, Sparks, and their new friend, Amandla...
Amandla? That means power!
...loaded Primo into good old Ambulance 57, but...
But what was Primo going to do? Now that it was crystal clear to him that all these years when his brother officers said justice, it always meant just them.
I never thought I'd get shot by the cops.
So those were cops?
Out of uniform and out looking for trouble.
It wasn't always like this.
Yeah, it was. You just didn't want to see it. Y'all cops are just power-crazy security guards, and this whole country is just one big shopping mall.
And if the rest of us don't look right or dress right, or if we ask why all the shops got to be all racist and sexist and classist, and why the salespeople got to make minimum wage working for billion-dollar companies, and if we say we should take over this whole damn mall and make it into a big co-op,
a co-op where all the workers benefit instead of just the billionaires at the top.
That's when the owners of the mall tell y'all mall cops to crack our heads and kick us out.
Wow, a national co-op with health care for all.
I wasn't just a mall cop.
Wait a minute. Weren't you at the protest earlier?
Just for a few minutes. I was on my way to Crosstown Labs and... Hey, he's the guy who got tear gassed. And now it's rubber bullets?
I'm having a bad day.
What happened?
Well, after we left the protest, Amandla took me through the graveyard.
Graveyard?
Then I started hearing voices.
Voices?
And then I was surrounded by all these ghosts.
Ghosts?
Sparks, look out!
What?
That cab, it just pulled into the street!
Oh, no!
Well, it looks like Primo's day has gone from bad to... Terse.
Nurse Susie Terse. But what's going to happen?
Will Sparks and Susie get the blood to the hospital?
Will Primo be all right? Will Amandla ever establish an equitable workers' state?
We'll find out after this message.
If you or a loved one has suffered from injury, death, or permanent disabling because of experimental pharmaceutical treatment, unnecessary COVID-19 exposure, or over-squeezing by a Hug Me Human Touch replacement robot, you may be entitled to compensation. Were you or a loved one a resident of the Palm Senior Community in 2020? Then call the law offices of Rodriguez and Chan.
When I lost my job, I couldn't afford my mom's high-end retirement community anymore. I thought the Palms would be a good deal, but I didn't read the fine print. They tested drugs on her.
You may be able to get contracts from the Palms invalidated.
I don't have my mom anymore, but I do have a fair settlement, thanks to the law offices of Rodriguez and Chan.
Were you or a loved one part of the Hugley Massacre of September 2020? You may be entitled to payment for emotional damages.
When my home was burglarized, I thought I would be safer at the Palms. The Hugley robots were supposed to help us, but they would hug and hug and not let go. I have 3 broken ribs and a punctured lung. But the law offices of Rodriguez and Chan got me paid.
The Palms Inc. has been found to be criminally negligent.
All my friends are dead.
You don't need to suffer in silence, because the law offices of Rodriguez and Chan are here for you and here for justice. Call 1-800-ELDERLY. That's 1-800-ELDERLY. We don't get paid until the Palms pays you.
We'd stopped at the kind of crazy angle a cab always comes to when it's wrapped around a telephone pole. Half turned, half off the ground, and as awkwardly placed as an intelligent black man at a Trump rally. And just as uncomfortable.
Are you okay?
A little bruised, but I'll live. How about you, Red?
I think I'm... Wait, what's this wet stuff? I guess I got some oil on me?
That, my friend, is blood.
Blood?
Specifically, your blood. You got a nasty cut on your forehead.
My blood? Oh.
At which point Red turned whiter than a Republican fundraiser.
I don't feel so good.
Hey, you two okay?
I'm all right, but my friend here got a knock on the head.
I'll take care of her. I'm a nurse.
Nurse Susie Terse!
What happened?
You came out of that side street. We swerved to miss you, but you hit this telephone pole. Come on, let's get your friend into the ambulance, mister.
Jade. Derek Jade.
Oh.
It's my fault. I told Red to hurry. I got a story that'll blow the lid off the whole anti-union racket at Jamazon.com.
Racket?
How they're threatening the workers, firing the organizers.
Why would they do that?
The way I figure it, they want to keep their costs down until they've killed all their competition. Then they can charge the customers whatever they want and pay their workers almost nothing.
It's the same with healthcare. It's all about keeping the workers too afraid to demand better conditions, too scared they'll lose their health coverage so the corporations can treat them like indentured servants.
Indentured servants?
Indentured servants!
That's the real reason we don't have national health care.
National health care?
National health care!
The nurse sounded pretty upset. Like when you realize that all the tear gas in your eyes was paid for with your tax dollars.
Yes! That's exactly how I feel.
I said that out loud.
He does that a lot.
Red! You feeling better?
I'm okay.
But all that blood...
What can I say? I'm a bleeder. That's why they call me Red.
I thought it was your politics.
It's a multi-purpose nickname.
All this talk about corruption, you don't know the half of it. Those cops back there, they're just a bunch of thugs.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't I know you?
I wondered when you would recognize me.
Aren't you that bartender?
I know. The racist bartender who didn't have time for your questions.
And aren't you an ex-cop?
Yes. And I thought I was a good one. But tonight I realized... You know why all these right-wing goons don't get arrested? Because cops don't like arresting cops.
You're just realizing this.
I heard it directly from the captain's mouth. I gotta tell someone.
I wish there was someone we could tell about Dr. Janice.
About people being kept sick and desperate so they can be controlled.
Well, me and Red were on our way to talk to a friend of mine at City Newspaper.
City Newspaper?
Are those still around?
Just barely.
What do you think, Susie? City Newspaper is in the opposite direction as City Hospital.
I know, Sparks, but is telling this story about profit-driven medical madness more important than a cure for COVID-19?
COVID-19?
COVID-19!
Well, we could just put the blood sample back in the cooler, go to the newspaper first, tell the story, then go to the hospital.
But what about our patients?
I'm fine.
The hospital can wait.
Are you sure?
The important thing is letting the people know the truth.
Okay, then. Sparks, get us the City Newspaper.
And so Sparks pulled old number 57 around and sped off toward the City Newspaper building, where Susie could tell her story of greed and manipulation.
But was Primo really going to cross the thin blue line to tell the truth about fat blue lies?
We pulled up in front of the City Newspaper building. It was after hours, and the building was closed tighter than an underfunded post office. But there was a security guard on duty.
Can I help you?
Well, I could use a hand exposing the corporate government partnership that is grinding us under its boot of fascistic oppression.
Grinding us under the... Wait, is that Primo?
Hey, Kirby!
Haven't seen you since you left the force. What are you doing here?
My friend here says he has a friend upstairs.
The name is Jade. Derek Jade.
You're Derek Jade?
That's what he said.
Well, why didn't you say so? My buddy Joe, the security guard over at Jamazon, called and said I should let you in. I don't know if anyone is still up in the offices, but you're welcome to check.
Thanks, Kirby.
What are we going to tell them when we get up there?
Everything. If we spill it all, they gotta at least print some of it.
You think it'll make a difference?
The election is coming up soon.
Maybe if we can get enough people to pay attention, to listen.
14th floor.
Looks empty.
It can't be. The press never sleeps.
Maybe not. But sometimes they take pretty long naps.
Is anyone here?
Yes, of course.
Where are you?
On the intercom. Please wait at the door of the inner office.
Have I got a story for you?
About the real reason we don't have national health care.
National health care?
National health care!
I got a story about greed and corruption, and a rich guy balder than the lies at a presidential press conference.
Chip Bonzo?
That's the guy!
I know him.
My story is about a realization. All those years thinking I was a good cop, supporting a system set up to bring out the worst in people, even if they didn't start that way. I see now that cops aren't part of the problem. They are the problem.
A cab.
Sorry, mine's wrecked.
What?
'Cause I drive a cab. Get it?
Red.
Aww. Sorry.
All of your stories are very upsetting. Please come into the office.
I don't see you.
I'm here.
Where?
Everywhere. at every desk, on every computer, in every tablet. I'm the new software that has been installed to run City Newspaper more efficiently, to weed out stories that might upset our readers. My job is to know our subscribers better than they know themselves and give them only the articles and report on stories that my algorithm says they already agree with, stories that make them feel good about themselves and good about America.
Who are you?
My name is Clia.
Well, this is a predicament.
What will become of our brave heroes? Will they escape this new, unexpected threat?
Or will the heartless corporate system crush them?
Will freedom and equality win the day?
Or will they all fall into the abyss? I guess we'll just have to wait and see in the thrilling conclusion of
Tales of the Resistance!
And now, a public service presentation.
He's here again, Principal Johnson.
Thank you, Miss Larkin.
Principal Johnson, I got a bone to pick with you.
Whoa, that's no way to start a conversation. What's all this about?
You said all us kids should look out for our friends.
Well, that's what good friends do.
Well, that's what I've been doing, but my teacher said I shouldn't.
Well, it does depend on the situation.
Me and some of the guys were playing, and there was this new kid, and he was kind of scary.
What did he do?
Nothing really, but you know, he wasn't one of us. Anyway, some of the guys, somehow he got hurt. Just a little bit.
I see.
He told the teacher who did it, but they said they didn't.
And you know the truth.
I gotta stick up for my friends, right?
Oh, I understand, Jimmy. You and your friends are just like the police.
The police? Golly.
They do that kind of thing all the time.
They do?
Now, sometimes the police beat people up and lie about it because they're ordered to. Sometimes it's just pathologically violent.
Patho-what?
But mostly it's because they're scared.
Scared? But I thought police officers were brave.
That's what a lot of people think, Jimmy. But actually, police officers are trained to be almost insanely afraid of anyone who's not a cop, and to think that everyone, especially black people, are out to kill them.
Golly, they're trained to be scared?
Like all Americans, they're taught to be violently afraid of black people from when they're just little kids, like you.
Gosh!
Hey, I know. Let's play a game.
Cops and robbers?
No, Jimmy. More like cops and black people.
That's a weird name for a game.
And since you're wearing a blue jacket, you can be the cop.
Yay!
And I'll be a black guy.
Okay.
But first, I'll be Mr. American Culture, telling you that black people are always mad.
Why would you say that?
Well, for hundreds of years, most black people in the United States were slaves, even after the Civil War that theoretically freed them.
Theoretically?
For a lot of white people, thinking they're better than black people is all they have.
Why?
Well, Jimmy, it's like the rich people hypnotized them.
Hypnotized? Golly.
Golly is right. And rather than organizing to overthrow the system that keeps the working class fighting amongst itself, some white people were hypnotized into thinking the most important thing was protecting their imaginary superiority.
Wow!
And for the past 160 years, some of them have done every terrible thing you can think of to black people.
Jerks!
And so now they think black people want revenge for 400 years of violent oppression.
Why would they think that?
Because that's what they would want if it happened to them.
Do black people want revenge?
Well, the important thing is to make white people think they do. So, to keep them afraid, Mr. American Culture always shows you angry black people.
Like on TV.
On drugs and with guns, even if they're supposed to be the good guys.
Like in the movies.
And criminals out to get ya.
Like on the news.
Okay, so now I'm your teacher at the police academy. Attention!
Yes, sir.
The city is full of black people who hate you.
Really?
Because you're a cop, they hate you more than anything else.
Oh, no.
And sometimes you're alone on a dark street.
Gee.
With these big black thugs all around, everywhere.
Principal Johnson?
Behind every corner, behind every door.
I'm getting scared.
They want to kill you.
Who, me?
And suddenly, behind you is...
What?
A black guy.
Ah!
Well, aren't you going to shoot me?
No.
Why not? You can get away with it. You're a cop. Just tell people I had a gun or a knife, even if I didn't. They'll believe you.
I shouldn't just shoot people because I'm scared.
Or you could arrest me, then beat me up in your car or down at the station.
But you didn't do anything.
But what if some other cop beat up a black guy, or anyone, and asked you to lie for them?
I don't wanna.
And that, Jimmy, is why you could never be a cop.
Because I wouldn't be mean or lie about other cops who were mean?
Because you aren't a bully and wouldn't put loyalty to bad cops ahead of doing the right thing.
But, J. Principal Johnson, couldn't I be one of the cops who aren't bullies? Don't lie, but just don't say anything?
You'd still be just as bad, Jimmy. Because not speaking out lets bad cops keep right on being bad.
Like I kind of did with that kid and my friends.
That's right.
Golly, aren't there any good cops?
Sure there are.
Yay!
But normally they get fired if they don't protect the cops who are violent racists, sexists, homophobes.
Homophobes?
That's a talk for another day, Jimmy.
Well, Principal Johnson, I sure learned a lot. On TV and in the movies, cops are mostly heroes. But in real life, it seems to me... like, maybe all cops are bad...
Tardy to the idea they're not an occupying army surrounded by the enemy?
No, I was going to say all cops are bad...
Tardy to the realization that their deepest devotion should be to civil rights, not to a code that protects criminals wearing police uniforms?
No, all cops are...
Bastardizations of the idea of honorably protecting and serving their communities?
You're not going to let me say it, are you?
Not unless you want detention.
Well, I guess I better get back to class and tell my teacher what happened.
I guess you better.
But you know what, Principal Johnson...
What, Jimmy?
Some things are worth detention.
What do you mean?
I mean, all cops are...
The Beginning of the End was written by Michael Gene Sullivan and directed by Valina Brown. Commercials written by Marie Cartier. Music and lyrics by Daniel Savio. Music production by Dred Scott. Woodwinds by Dylan Jennings. Brass by Deborah Del Mastro. Audio engineering and sound design by Taylor Gonzalez. And featured Brian Rivera, Valina Brown, Lisa Hori Garcia, Keiko Shimosato Carrero, Michael Gene Sullivan, Lizzie Caligero, Cassie Grilli, Andre Amoratico, Marie Cartier, Marissa Ellison, Jillian Eichenberger, and Michael J. Asbury as the Gravekeeper. Little Jimmy's Revelation was written by Michael Gene Sullivan, directed by Valina Brown, and featured Valina Brown, Michael Gene Sullivan, and Ellen Callis as Little Jimmy. And make sure to stay tuned for the thrilling conclusion of Tales of the Resistance. The End of the Beginning.
The San Francisco Mime Troupe proudly presents Seeing Red, a time-traveling musical.
Seeing Red. Seeing Red.
We invite you to join Bob, a present-day Trump supporter who travels back in time to 1912 and discovers a hidden chapter of American history that changes her forever. Seeing Red comes with a handy teacher's guide for use in the classroom and is available at www.sfmt.org.
The San Francisco Mime Troupe, and for the past 60 years, we have been doing political musical comedies for anybody who will listen. The Mime Troupe is a worker-run, multi-ethnic, multi-generational collective of activist artists committed to overthrowing capitalism one musical comedy at a time. And one of these days, we will get it right. Each summer, we tour our shows at a price every member of the working class can afford, free. But with theaters and parks closed, protesters in the streets, tear gas in the air, and what could be America's last election looming on the horizon, the Mime Troupe needed to make sure our message of art, activism, and revolution was part of the resistance. And nothing says revolutionary fervor like radio plays. And for those wondering how a radical theater can survive these capitalist times, it's because of you. The Mime Troupe doesn't take corporate sponsorship. You'll never see the AT&T or Comcast Mime Troupe. How could we show the hypocrisies of capitalism if we were in bed with the capitalists? So instead, we are in bed with you, our fellow workers. Let's snuggle. And after that, you can support the troupe by visiting our website, sfmt.org. thank you to the San Francisco Arts Commission, SF Grants for the Arts, California Arts Council, USPPP, the Fleischacker Foundation, the Bernard Osher Foundation, the Zellerbach Family Foundation, the Don Stevens and Nicole Bellotti Laugh and Love Fund, this public radio station, and listeners like you.
San Francisco Mime Troupe telling it like it is. Some indeed intense satire today, coupled with some rings of truth, I think. They are an amazing group of people, and we're happy to have this collaboration. A 9-part series that we've been doing for some time now, every other week. But you'll have the bonus of the final episode of Tales of the Resistance next week as Angie Coiro guests hosts Open Air. For me, David Latulippe. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show, and of course, Damian D. Minor in the studio. A bunch of interesting things are happening here in the Bay Area, including our friends at Theater Rhino and John Fisher's next show. It's called The Big Island, conceived and performed by John Fisher. That's going to be tonight at 8 o'clock, one performance only. It's free. You can go to therhino.org for more information. And a reminder that next week, with Angie Coiro as guest host, she'll be talking with Amy Seiwert and Ben Needham Wood about a series of documentary dance films presented by San Francisco-based dance company Amy Seiwert's Imagery, entitled Sketch Films Red Thread. And hey, if you're a fan of theater on radio tomorrow night, how appropriate, how timely, you'll hear an adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein on LA Theater Works from 8 to 10. That's an adaptation and updated by Kate McCall. You'll want to hear that. And great for a Halloween Eve and a full moon to boot that'll be peeking out. So put your radio somewhere where you can enjoy Frankenstein tomorrow night on LA Theater Works. A reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. If you got some comments about today's show, whether it's about the interesting Mayan troupe today, or perhaps a suggestion for a future show segment, dash me an email. I'm david@kalw.org. Thanks so much for listening. And again, archives at kalw.org. Check it out.